The following reading is brought to you by the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, February 6th, 2025. The pantograph has had technical problems in producing today's newspapers, but we will be able to read some of the stories planned for the day. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Fear, Anger, Hope, Shown at ICE Protest by Students on ISU Campus, by Djack Alkier. Normal. They marched with signs reading things like, No Hate, No Fear, Immigrants Are Welcome, and, in Spanish, My Parents Work Harder Than Your President. Nearly 130 students and supporters at Illinois State University marched from Uptown Circle and took over the Quad midday Wednesday to protest the Trump administration's immigration crackdown and escalated immigration enforcement across the country by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I am one of the students that are affected from this. Like, I came with my family when I was 3 years old to the U.S., said one student who asked to be identified only by her initials, MN, for her safety. These people who are protesting make me feel secure and at home, because I know, even though they don't have the same situation as me or the same story, they are still standing next to me and screaming the same words as I am, MN said. Even though Illinois' Trust Act prohibits state and local law enforcement from helping ICE enforce civil immigration requirements, marches like Wednesday's show solidarity with migrants who do not have that protection, said 20-year-old David Anthony Herrera, one of the protest's organizers. We're trying to fight for people who don't have the privilege to be in a state like we do. So we have to use our voices, our resources, our campus, to be able to speak for those who can't, Herrera said. Herrera's parents are migrants from Mexico. He is studying Spanish at ISU. While the crowd mostly consisted of people from a Hispanic or Latin background, there were people from other ethnicities and backgrounds present as well, something that Herrera finds necessary. The diverse group of people, by its nature, is the marginalized group. So we all have to stick up with each other, like to fight against the things that we are so deprived of, he said. The right way. 1 week before Wednesday's protest, Charlotte Alvarez, executive director of the Immigration Project in Bloomington Normal, sat for an interview with Lee Enterprises. Alvarez graduated from Harvard University in 2012 with a degree in immigration law. While there are few avenues for people seeking U.S. citizenship, the process of seeking legal asylum can be quite lengthy, 8 to 10 years, she said. The U.S. government immediately puts them in contact with ICE and into removal proceedings. So there's a deportation case started against that person. That's the goal of that case, is to determine can they stay. Do they have a legal right to remain, or are they going to be deported? Alvarez said. Those courts, though, are so overwhelmed that the wait time for an initial hearing before an immigration judge can take 3 to 4 years, she said. Another pathway to legal citizenship is through a qualifying relationship with a sibling, Alvarez explained. For example, if I'm a U.S. citizen and I want to petition my brother from Mexico, who was born there, there's a category for that, she said. But the wait list is 150 years long. Only a set amount of those visas can be awarded at a time. And since those seeking that type of visa are so numerous, anyone applying for a new one would die before receiving it, Alvarez said. The complicated and long, often impossible, legal process leaves migrants feeling frustrated. The process takes so much time and money, like it makes it almost impossible for people to come here the right way, said Leah Gutierrez, a 19-year-old sophomore from Peoria, studying publishing and mass media at ISU. Most migrants are only seeking steady work and opportunities to provide for their families, said 19-year-old Gabrielle Chaydez, a sophomore from Chicago who is studying finance, and said he has many family members navigating the immigration process. We're here to, like, make a better life, better lives for ourselves, and we're over here being kind of, like, bad-mouthed for just doing something that we believe in, he said. Sometimes, for whatever reason, the legal process takes too long, he said. Some people don't have 10 years, Chaydez said, about the lengthy immigration process. Some people just don't have 10 years. The American Dream. In his first public address to the nation in January 2015, when he first announced his candidacy for president, Donald Trump disparaged migrants from Central and South America, specifically Mexico. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crimes, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people, he said a decade ago. We are not murderers or rapists. We are students. We are future leaders. We are future doctors, future nurses, said MN. Like, we want that future. We want, like, don't deport our potential. That future, though, seems farther away than ever for Gutierrez. A lot of families have come here for the so-said American dream, she said. Personally, in my 19 years here, I haven't really seen an American dream. As time goes on, I think hatred has become more widespread and has had us more divided than ever. Trump recently signed an executive order attempting to undo birthright citizenship for migrants without proper documentation, an effort that was blocked for a second time Wednesday by a U.S. district judge in Maryland because it violates the Citizenship Clause of the 14th Amendment, according to The Hill. Trump's continued efforts to overturn settled precedent is fueling anger among children of migrants. I think it's absolutely atrocious, Gutierrez said, like, I'm a citizen thanks to birthright citizenship, and I think it's literally, it's in the amendment. The renewed push for sweeping immigration reform, enforcement, and deportations is affecting student success, more so than the first Trump presidency. I remember when he took office in 2017, like when I was in middle school. It just felt like the whole world changed, MN said. Still, despite the fears a second Trump presidency has brought, the turnout for protests fosters a sense of optimism for students like Chaydez. I'm hopeful seeing how many people can come out today, he said. The march was planned to take place again starting at noon Thursday in Uptown Circle, then marching to the Quad at 12:15 p.m. and remaining there until 2 p.m. The next local story is headlined, Bloomington Teen Detained on Gun Charges in Connection with August Shooting, by Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. A Bloomington teen is being held in custody, facing 6 gun charges, in connection with a shooting in which a man was injured last August. Navarro D. Godfrey, 18, is charged with aggravated battery discharging a firearm, a Class X felony, aggravated battery causing great bodily harm, a Class 3 felony, 2 counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm, both Class 1 felonies, aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon, a Class 4 felony, and criminal damage to property, a Class A misdemeanor. Godfrey appeared in court Tuesday for an initial appearance in custody before Judge Greg Minger. Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt appeared on behalf of the prosecution and filed a petition to detain Godfrey on the grounds of dangerousness. Assistant Public Defender Brian McEldowney represented Godfrey during the hearing. According to the probable cause statement, Bloomington officers were in a parking lot in the 900 block of North Main Street around 8:57 p.m. on August 16, 2024, when they heard loud pops like gunshots. Officers found a witness in the surrounding area who told police he had been with the people who fired the shots and pointed officers in the direction of the shots, Fitt said. The witness was observed to be carrying a digital camera and told police he was a self-employed videographer. He told officers he had been filming a music video when the subjects of the video began shooting at a vehicle and person. The witness refused to name the person who had hired him for the video and refused to provide the music video footage to police. Bloomington police executed a search warrant to obtain the videos and were able to identify the suspects. Shamar T. Williams, 17, of Bloomington, was previously charged in connection to this case. He faces these charges: aggravated battery discharging a firearm, a Class X felony; aggravated battery causing great bodily harm, a Class 3 felony; 2 counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm, all Class 1 felonies; unlawful possession of a firearm, a Class 3 felony; criminal damage to property, a Class A misdemeanor. Another suspect was also arrested on lesser charges in connection to this shooting. Initially, Godfrey was unable to be identified on video, but following investigation through the Illinois State Police Statewide Terrorism and Intelligence Center, police were able to make an identification, court records said. The prosecution said Godfrey's appearance is notable because of a small scar, mole, or birthmark on the side of his chin, straight down from the corner of his mouth. Godfrey was subsequently arrested February 3rd on a warrant that was issued January 29th, following a grand jury indictment. Godfrey told police he was present for the music video, but he denied involvement in the shooting, Fitt said. One man was injured in the shooting. From his gunshot wound, prosecutors said a bullet appeared to have entered his upper left arm and exited his upper left back. The man who was shot told police he had gotten out of his car in the 300 block of West Graham Street when he saw a man with a gun. He did not know the man. A woman and a child younger than 2 were present when he was shot, court documents indicate. The woman told police one person shot at him while another shot at their vehicle. The woman quickly drove away from the area, she said. Both the man and the woman provided descriptions of the shooters to police. Using their descriptions and the music video footage, police were able to match the clothing and height of the shooters with Williams and Godfrey. Officers found 2 fired 9mm shell casings at the scene and recovered bullet fragments from a nearby residence. A stray bullet had gone through the window of a nearby residence, striking a wall at the bottom of the stairs inside the home. Ultimately, the judge ordered to detain Godfrey, agreeing with the state's petition. Godfrey is scheduled for an arraignment February 21st. Next, we have a state of Illinois story headlined, Pritzker signs law to prioritize placing foster children with family members, by Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. Foster care officials will have to prioritize placing children with their relatives under a new law signed by Governor J.B. Pritzker on Wednesday. Pritzker signed the Kinship in Demand Act, or KIND Act, at a ceremony at the State House. The new law puts an obligation on the Department of Children and Family Services to use a kin-first approach when placing children in foster care. Lawmakers and advocates said it's better for children to be placed with a family member or another person close to the child when possible. Keeping these children safe and connected with relatives isn't just smart policy, it's the right thing to do, Pritzker said. Kin-first foster systems decrease the risk of abuse and create a higher chance of achieving permanent placement for kids, according to Casey Family Programs, the nation's largest foundation focused on foster care. Most of the youth in DCFS care are already placed with families, according to Pritzker. It makes sure that we take into account the wishes of young people that we care for and their families when we plan for their futures, DCFS Director Heidi Muller said. DCFS will develop a certification policy for family members, which will allow them more access to financial resources for caregiving. The cost of raising a child is the same, whether it's done by a relative or a stranger, Pritzker said. The KIND Act allows DCFS to support relative caregivers by developing the certification standards specifically for them, ensuring the safety and well-being of youth in care, and allowing them to receive the same payment rate as non-family caregivers. Relatives will also have different criminal background criteria than other foster parents. The federal government allows DCFS to waive non-safety-related licensing for relative caregivers on a case-by-case basis. Relatives would still be subject to a personal analysis assessing their criminal record and its potential impact on the child. Courts would also have a larger role in family finding efforts, like monitoring whether DCFS complies with notifying relatives that a child has been removed from their parents' custody within 30 days. Like most other state agencies, DCFS faced challenges during a 2-year budget impasse that ended in 2017 and strained the system's funding and ability to promptly place children in care settings. The Pritzker administration ramped up funding for the agency, but former DCFS Director Mark Smith was found by a Cook County judge in contempt of court multiple times in 2022 for failing to find adequate placements for foster care children, some of whom were living in psychiatric hospitals longer than was medically necessary. An appellate court later vacated the contempt citations. The agency has been the subject of some of the most intense criticism Pritzker's administration has faced as governor. But lawmakers and advocates said Wednesday they're seeing steps in the right direction for the agency since Mueller took over 1 year ago. I really do feel like we got it right this time, because what the KIND Act is all about is keeping families intact, Senator Mattie Hunter, Democrat of Chicago, said. DCFS will now be turning their focus to helping kids transition from foster care to adulthood, Mueller said. This includes funding to expand services for housing for kids in foster care and improve planning for the transition to adulthood earlier in a child's life. It's an area that, frankly, we've looked at and we've recognized that there has been a gap in the support that we provide over time, Mueller said. Here's another Illinois story headlined, Once Obscure Illinois Company, WeatherTech Has Wild Ride with 13th Super Bowl Ad. by Robert Chanik, Chicago Tribune. Bolingbrook. When Super Bowl 59 airs Sunday on Fox from New Orleans, more than 100 million viewers are expected to watch the Kansas City Chiefs vie for an unprecedented three-peat when they take on the Philadelphia Eagles. An unlikely Chicago team is on an equally remarkable Super Bowl run, as WeatherTech, a once obscure Bolingbrook car floor mat manufacturer, and Pinnacle Advertising, a small Schaumburg agency, roll out their 13th Super Bowl commercial since 2014. That WeatherTech is still going head-to-head with some of the biggest brands in the world, a true David and Goliath marketing story, has defied skeptics and arguably changed the game of Super Bowl advertising. "It's really been astonishing," said Tim Calkins, a marketing professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, who heads up an annual Super Bowl advertising review. "I keep thinking it will be there last year. They keep showing up." In 2014, WeatherTech founder David McNeil had the audacity to blow a large chunk of his marketing budget on his first Super Bowl spot, paying $4 million for the airtime to compete on TV's biggest advertising stage. Employing the creative chops of little-known Northwest suburban ad agency Pinnacle made WeatherTech even more of a long shot to succeed. Despite the naysayers, WeatherTech has become a Super Bowl mainstay over the years, joining the likes of Budweiser, Doritos, and T-Mobile. In the process, the privately owned company has grown exponentially, with annual sales in the high nine figures and a ubiquitous year-round advertising presence. "The Super Bowl ads have truly elevated their brand," said Michael Magnuson, founder and CEO of Pinnacle Advertising. After a brief semi-hiatus, WeatherTech opted for a less expensive pregame spot last year. The plucky Southwest suburban company is back in the big game with a second quarter commercial that cost a reported $7 million for the airtime. The new spot, which has been released in advance online, is a radical departure from WeatherTech's consistent Made in America messaging, shifting to a carload of 70-something women raising hell on the open road while keeping the interior pristine, thanks to the floor mats. "This might be their best spot so far," Calkins said. The Super Bowl remains the most expensive and most watched TV event of the year. A record 123.7 million viewers tuned into last year on CBS to see Kansas City beat San Francisco 25-22 in a memorable overtime contest from Las Vegas. Advertising for this year's broadcast was selling for a reported $7 million per spot in May, when WeatherTech and Pinnacle booked the airtime. The price has now climbed to a record $8 million per spot for a handful of last-second advertisers. Founded in 1989 by McNeil, WeatherTech makes custom vehicle floor mats, which it sells directly to consumers and to automobile makers. Over the years, it has expanded into everything from dog feeding systems and car phone holders to a brief foray into face shields during the pandemic. The company has more than 1,500 workers on its sprawling Bolingbrook campus, where its products are made. WeatherTech's core marketing strategy has long been in the hands of Pinnacle, founded in 1998 by Magnuson, a former Chicago Tribune ad salesman. Started as a small auto industry-focused shop, Pinnacle made a name for itself with the first WeatherTech Super Bowl spot more than a decade ago. It has since grown to more than 100 employees, more than 100 clients across multiple industries, and more than $250 million in annual billings, with satellite locations in Scottsdale and San Francisco. The agency also survived a trademark infringement lawsuit with unrelated Pinnacle Advertising of Florida, whose existence came to light when trade publication Ad Age mistakenly linked to the wrong Pinnacle in an article about Super Bowl advertisers in January 2015, and then repeated the mistake in January 2016. The Florida agency has since gone out of business, Magnuson said. While declining to disclose the annual spend, Magnuson said WeatherTech remains Pinnacle's largest client and that the company's advertising budget has grown in tandem with its annual revenue since taking the initial Super Bowl plunge. WeatherTech's high-profile Super Bowl run has also been a magnet for attracting new business to Pinnacle, Magnuson said. We have many clients that are with us now because of the work that we've done with WeatherTech, he said. For WeatherTech, the impetus to return to the big game was catalyzed by a creative idea about older women going wild, which was developed by one of Pinnacle's art directors and pitched to McNeil last spring, Magnuson said. McNeil loved the concept from the get-go, Magnuson said, and even came up with the idea for the song that drives the spot, Born to be Wild, the 1968 classic by Steppenwolf that became the defining theme of the iconic Easy Rider movie soundtrack. Pinnacle booked Grammy-winning music video director Joseph Kahn, who has worked with Taylor Swift and Eminem, to helm the commercial, shot in mid-November in Pacific Palisades, Playa del Rey, and Malibu, California, before the devastating wildfires. In the spot, a posse of silver-haired women in a 1963 Lincoln convertible pop Born to be Wild into the 8-track player and head out on the coastal highway looking for adventure. They find plenty of it, spray-painting a moving tractor-trailer, doing donuts through an oncoming motorcycle gang, breakdancing at the beach, flashing to celebrate a bingo victory, and culminating with a Thelma and Louise-style leap that spills their tea and cookies on the floor mats. "Don't worry, girls, I've got WeatherTech," the driver reassures her passengers. The adventure ends with mugshots after a motorcycle cop catches the cruising women speeding, and a judge brings the gavel down. Unlike most WeatherTech spots, which focus on the Made in America backstory and the functionality of the floor mats, the new commercial, like its leading ladies, takes some risks to convey a higher-order benefit and break through the clutter of the competitive Super Bowl stage, he said. While the spot features seniors, Magnuson said it should connect with a broader demographic. It takes these older women and positions them as being badasses who are just out for fun, he said. I think it's going to resonate a lot with a younger generation. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for February 6th. Please stay tuned.